Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Rhino Nation, broadcast to you live from the Phoenix Business Radio X studio in Tempe, Arizona, powered by Rhino Online Strategies and eCreativity. Rhino Nation is a growing community of incredible entrepreneurs and small business owners that share a common trait. They don't walk, they don't run, they charge to their destiny. From the mind-blowing talents of Generation Next to the treasure trove of seasoned business minds, we acknowledge and celebrate their business expertise, leadership, and fearless attitude to be victorious in their goals. Rhino Nation is committed to making powerful connections and providing enhanced exposure to broaden the reach and promote the extraordinary talents of our community members. I'm Michelle Faust, and with great pleasure, I introduce my guest today, Patrick Davis, associate broker and realtor with My Home Group, Gelly Achenblut, CEO and founder of NetworkingPhoenix.com, and Howell Cheek, managing partner with Sigrist, Cheek, Potter, and Heiser, PLLC. So welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us here.
Yep, thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we have a kind of a conversation that's revolving around Arizona, a great place to do business, a great place to live in. I'm pretty much a native, so I remember the time when it was just a place for the retirees to come and live and get out of this now. And now we have such a vibrant communities and businesses. And so we're going to talk about that just a little bit. And might be a great place to live here, or if you've been living here, where you can get even greater benefits of exposure to your business and growing your business as well. And to that, I'm going to turn to Gelly first, because Gelly is the founder of Networking Phoenix, which I understand is the largest networking group in Phoenix with 40,000 members, probably growing.
Yes, yes, that's correct. So we're not so much a group as we are a community of local professionals. In essence, the website networkingphoenix.com has a calendar on it that lists all the different business networking events in town in the one calendar. So the community, of people that network, which would be your small business owners, entrepreneurs, sales, marketing professionals, really anybody that should be networking, they go to the site, they create a free profile to join the community, and then they have access to knowing where all these events are happening. And so, I've been doing that for about 11 years now here in town.
Wow. Okay. So then somebody who's a member then has access to the calendar and all the events that are going on across the valley.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be a member. You can most certainly take a look at it without being a member. But I imagine it'd be very irritating to have to keep clicking on the sign that says join now. But I mean, it's free to create a profile. So it's
right.
Okay. It's like a LinkedIn or like a Facebook.
So that's great to know, because there are so many networking opportunities out there, but mm-hmm. trying to find the one that's right for you and narrow it down. So some point, we have to do business and make money and not just pass a card around and try to meet people. So connection, finding that balance, I find, that can be very difficult.
Yes, passing your card around is not called networking. That's called really bad promoting.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of people have this huge misconception. Networking is very simple. It's the act of making friends. And if you think of it anything other than, then you're not really networking. And that's probably why it's not working. Because when you truly connect with people, people innately want to help you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just human nature. So the key is to connect and build on that connection and turn it into a relationship. Obviously, when you're networking, it's for mutually beneficial. It's got to be a mutually beneficial relationship in a professional setting. But we first always connect on a personal level, even when you are at a business networking event.
Right.
You know, so for instance, when I'm at an event, I don't even tell people what I do unless they ask me. Not even at anywhere, because who cares? You know, if we start talking and I don't like you as a person, I don't really care what you do for a living. I'm just being very, blunt with it. But it's just so true. You have to connect on that human level first. So it's not even about the events. I mean, the events, they're great. I mean, my whole company is based around promoting events. But you have to first get to the events, then you have to know what to do there, and then you have to know how to connect with people. So it's an entire process. I mean, you don't just show up and hand out your cards. You can, but then you're going to get really frustrated because nothing's going to happen.
Well, yeah, highly ineffectual, as I found. So to me, it's the art of being able to start that conversation without beginning with, hey, what do you do?
Right. Yes. Which is only in America is it somewhat appropriate to ask somebody what they do for a living within 5 seconds of meeting them. In any other country, they would look at you like you have 10 heads, you know. But I hate that question. And most people hate being asked that question. And I don't ever ask that. One of my favorite conversation starters is just to say, what's your story? You know, I don't even ask them their name because I'm not going to remember it. I'll ask them their name when it's relevant, and then I know I'm going to remember it. But I ask people what their story is, and they look at me kind of funny because they're confused. They're like, what do you mean, Wilma? I'm like, where are you from? How'd you hear about the event? You know, just back it up with something. And then, or they'll just answer my question, and instead of telling me what their story is, they'll tell me what they do for a living. You know, because they're so programmed to just, at a networking event, we talk about what we do for a living. But again, the connection doesn't happen until it happens on a personal level. So we're looking for commonality, likability. You know, what are your commonalities as a person? You know, maybe we're both here transplants from Chicago. You know, I don't know. Maybe both of us graduated ASU. I mean, you're looking for commonalities that you can connect with on these very basic, almost like small talk, human nature type of things. And then you grow on that. Because once you're interesting to me as a person, then I actually do want to know what you do for a living. You know, what do you do? And why are you here? What are you networking for? Right. And that's the way I'll ask, because I'll ask, so what are you networking for? Again, I'm asking the same thing, but in a different kind of way, because I don't want it to be awkward. And, you know, me being a professional networker, I'm always in control of the agenda, meaning I'm going to lead the conversation, you know, because I know what I need to find out from this person. And I'm not going to let them take, well, that's just how I am in life. I love your face, right, Michelle. I mean, that's just how I am in life in general. Like, this is my agenda. No, but it's, you know, again, because most people in networking situations, they're not comfortable, they're awkward, and they don't know where to go. So by me leading it, I'm making it easier for them to just talk about the things that are most natural for them to talk about.
So, great point, because I'm one of those people who walks into a room and looks around and I'm lost a little bit, right, you know, if I don't know someone there. And so since we're kind of addressing, you know, issues of individuals looking to perhaps come into the state, there again, you need to find a comfort level to become established within a group. And sometimes they have kind of their, shall we call them cliques, or their sort of established group that sometimes are hard to break into. Mm-hmm. That type of networking I try to avoid because I want to find the groups that are really open to people joining in.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, and I don't know, I can't say there are too many cliquey organizations here. I actually find that most people in Phoenix are extremely welcoming. And I've only done networking here, so I don't know what it's like anywhere else, but people that come from out of town, that's their feedback. They're like, I can't believe how open everyone is. And everybody here is so warm and so welcoming. So I haven't really had too many pushbacks. And if usually there's cliquey situations, I think it's maybe just friends catching up at an event and they're just literally looking to catch up. And it's harder to break into a conversation when two friends are catching up.
Good point. Okay. So we know that Phoenix is a friendly place.
Very friendly.
Very welcoming and very, very warm and open. So I know, Pat, if you were probably out talking to somebody and they said they did salmon fishing, that you would be like an instant friend forever, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Or maybe they know about razor clam.
Yeah.
So I happen to know that Pat is from Oregon and we've eaten some of those amazing razor clams that you've got.
They are very, very good. Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that you promote yourself is really being a relocation expert and as a realtor. And a part of that comes from you've moved a lot. You've lived in a couple of different states, and then most recently, again, Oregon, having come out here with a family, what, about 5 or 6 years?
6, 7 years ago. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And what was that experience like personally of making that move and trying to establish yourself in a new community?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we help people move every day. And we just take it for granted that moving is an easy thing to do until you actually do it yourself. So we moved, you know, from Portland here actually 3 different times because I had a couple of kids who went to Arizona State. So that was a move for each one of them coming down. And then we moved the rest of us down a couple of years later. So it really gave me empathy for what my clients are going through, and it helped me understand that it's very difficult on them. And we think, hey, we're just selling a house. You're just moving. It's no big deal. It's a huge deal. And it's emotional. It's expensive. It's a lot of fun because you get to go somewhere new. If you're excited about going somewhere new, that's really great. But it was a really good experience for me to be able to say, hey, I've done what you're doing several times, and to help them through that process. Because having the empathy to really understand their needs and what they're going through mm-hmm. makes the move a little bit easier for them.
So I actually have two questions. I'll see if I can remember the second one after I had the first one. But as far as directing, if somebody's coming in and they really don't know the area that well, what are some of the questions that you ask to try to establish where is a good area of the valley, good community that they might fit in well?
So a lot of that depends on the school district. So schools are very important to a lot of people. If they have children, they're worried about, you know, making sure they get into a good school district. So we talk about school districts. We talked about their likes and dislikes, what they want to do with their life. I mean, you know, just moving into a house is one thing, but moving into a community where you feel comfortable, where you feel safe, and you have like-minded people around you. So we just want to find out, are they active in sports? Are they active in theater? Do they want a country feel? Do they want more of a, you know, be in the suburbs? Get a feel for what their lifestyle is so we can direct them to an area that may be more comfortable for them. So you want to ask questions, you know, do you boat? Do you have do you need a big yard? Are you looking for maybe a church community? We can't really direct them into a specific area, but we can guide them with our knowledge of the marketplace and what the specific cities and towns have to offer.
Probably assume that you're going to pick out a couple of different options so that they then can get a feel for several different communities.
Yeah, and a lot of people know just from researching from the internet where they want to live. They think they do anyway until they actually get to the area and say, ooh, this is not where I want to be for whatever reason. And so we have to really know market knowledge of each of the cities and each of the locales to help them, to help guide them into an area where they're going to feel comfortable.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm going to shift over, talk about business and taxes, our favorite conversation.
Not really.
It's not?
For many people, it's not.
No. I know it's not. But so I just wanted to kind of get an idea of how does Arizona kind of stack up, so to speak, in terms of business taxes and personal taxes. And I say, well, we're more favorable than, say, some of the bigger cities. I've got to say, probably in California, New York, I'm thinking that answer is a big yes.
That one's obvious. Yes, absolutely. Arizona's interesting. And we've lived out here for over 40 years. So we've seen the growth. We've seen the migration of people coming from the Midwest, from the East, and especially from California for jobs and quite often for the opportunity to start small business. And as you may know, there is not a plethora of big business here in Phoenix especially and in Arizona in general, but our small business community is thriving, is growing, and is quite interesting, quite compelling really, because there are a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've seen the kind of growth we have in Arizona over the last 40 years that I'm aware of.
So it is a really favorable place for somebody who is entrepreneurial, small business minded then.
Absolutely. The barriers of entry for most types of opportunities are fairly limited. There's very little barrier of entry. It's a service economy here in many aspects. So it amazes us as an accounting firm, to see all the different types of ideas and things that people bring with them when they come to Phoenix. And it is a favorable, to your point, it is an extremely favorable state to do business in. Arizona ranks ninth in the whole scope of business taxation, meaning there's only 8 states that have lower overall income tax and business tax rates than we do. And when you throw that into lower real estate taxes, and a relatively middle of the road sales tax, it's a much, much less expensive environment than, say, a California. And again, I think that's why we see truckloads of Californians coming in daily.
Right. And, you know, I have to make mention at this point of that, of just the tragedy of the fires that are going on out there, because that's just amazing. And I have to say that last night when I was watching the news and seeing, you know, getting a greater view of the devastation, it's just horrific. I've always felt like living in Arizona that Mother Nature is pretty favorable with us as well in terms of not having to deal with tornadoes and hurricanes and storms. And we've got the wildfires, but fortunately they tend to take place in a little less populated areas so that the effect of human lives isn't quite so great. But anyway.
We get the convection oven effect for a couple of months during the summer. But other than that, that's still better than shoveling snow for a lot of people.
Well, and where can you say that, anywhere that you can say 8 months out of the year, at least, you've got some pretty fantastic weather. So I'll take the convection oven for a few months if we have to.
We can live with it. We can live with it.
Which I imagine pretty much everybody looking for a pool, right, Pat, to jump in?
Most people do, yeah. Yeah. Those 4 summer months are tough without a pool.
Mm-hmm. But would you agree with what Hal was saying in terms of the favorable nature of small business?
Well, and again, I haven't done business anywhere else except here, but it seems like, again, this is a very open atmosphere. You know, so anybody moving into the state, shouldn't be too difficult for them to spin up their own network, even if they're coming here with no network at all. And I've actually, throughout the years, many times I've heard people say to me, we moved here specifically because of Networking Phoenix, because it was just so easy to connect with people through your website. So I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, like that's really cool. But I mean, if you think about it, you know, a platform like ours doesn't quite exist anywhere else. I'm trying to get it to exist other places, but you know, it's been a journey. But you know, it really is easy to find the people that you want to do business with here. And Phoenix is, while it's a big city, it's a small, big city,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we're all connected somehow, and it's really not that difficult to get in touch with the person you want to get in touch with and get that meeting. So as far as moving a business here or starting over from scratch, it seems to be a pretty favorable environment.
Well, that's fantastic, especially since on this show we celebrate entrepreneurs. So I'm excited to hear, you know, you really mirror that that thought process. I love your tagline, Kelly, of who do you want to meet? I'll introduce you. Right. That tells me you know a lot of people out there.
I do know. I mean, that's my job, you know, to know a lot of people. I mean, I've been professionally networking, I would say, for a solid 12 years. I think, you know, a lot of times what happens is people know me even if I don't know them. So I'll get, I mean, this happens more and more often, but people will ask me to introduce them to somebody. And, you know, we're connected on LinkedIn. And I'm like, I don't know if I know this person, but I'll reach out. And they're like, oh, yes, I like they know of me, or they know what I've done. They know what I've created. So I'm credible to them, which makes the facilitating the introduction that much easier, you know. So that, and that's something I get hired for. People specifically will hire me to introduce them to other people, right? So these are high-level warm introductions. I have a client right now. He literally gave me a list of 18 CEOs and CFOs here. And he's like, all right, go have at it. You know, go, we'll see how we can get to them. So, and if I don't know them personally, then I work my own network to get the meeting. And there's very few people that I don't have a connection to. So, but that's always a fun project for me, you know, right. Especially if I'm like, I get a challenge. Like, I don't know somebody, how do I get to them? So, but yeah, that's my tagline. You know, who do you want to meet? I'll introduce you.
Yeah. Well, I have to make my list.
Yeah.
Moving on toward back to living in Arizona and the vibrant communities that we do have here. Do we have an area that really is faster growing, so to speak, than other areas is that usually for a time, the East Valley was just like exploding. Now it seems like things in the West Valley are really taking off at this point.
Yeah, you know, if you look at Scottsdale, Scottsdale's limited to, there's not a lot of land to build new construction. And you get to the south of Phoenix and you've got fissures and sinking land and unstable land, so there's not a lot of growth there. The big growth area is going to come from the West Phoenix. They're saying that in 20 years, West Phoenix could be as big, if not larger, than Phoenix itself. So it's moving from where the Cardinal Stadium is now, and it's just going to keep moving west. That should be our biggest growth area. It's a great place to live. I mean, anywhere you live in Phoenix is a really great place to live. We've got some of the best weather in the country. The summer times are you know, challenging, but look at Chicago. Look at Oregon. You look at anywhere where there's 8 months of snow and cold and rain and gloomy, we get 300 some days a year of sunshine. It's really hard to beat that.
Right. Now they're really going to start flooding in at this point.
I hope
anybody
so.
Anybody listening to you? Well, and the other thing that I have seen since, you know, the many years that I've been here is that it used to seem like the East Valley, Scottsdale, the East Valley had everything kind of going on, the entertainment, the restaurants and everything else. And then all of a sudden the Coyotes moved over to the West Valley, and then the Cardinals moved over to the West Valley. And around that, all kinds of shopping and entertainments and events really started growing up around all of that, where now the West Valley does offer, you know, everything, if not more, in some degree.
Yeah, the West Valley used to be Sun City. I mean,
yeah.
That was, you know, there was Glendale, Peoria, but they were small cities compared to what they are today.
Yeah.
And that area has grown. I started coming to Phoenix in 1985, and it was mostly one freeway through town. And everywhere you went was, you know, side streets. You didn't have the luxury of getting on a freeway and getting somewhere quickly. Well, that's developed. They've done a great job in Phoenix of urban planning and growing their freeways and making Phoenix a livable city that's still easy to get around. Sure, we have some traffic issues, but nowhere near San Francisco, LA, Portland, Seattle. Our traffic flows fairly well here because they've done a good job of planning for growth. So yeah, the East Valley, you know, has always been a great place to be. Scottsdale is like being on vacation. The West Valley is going to be the biggest growth area. So it's just, there's a lot of opportunities, no matter where you want to be. There's a lot of opportunities for living in this area.
Fantastic. So I know that there's great tax credit that Arizona offers from a state income tax standpoint. Is that pretty common with other states as well? And what, by those, I mean that we can opt to give to certain charities of our choice that that's where our state tax dollars can go, is that we have that choice and option.
Right. You're effectively redirecting your tax dollars to specific charities or organizations of your choice. So it's unusual. There's only two other states that do something similar to that. So again, and it's, you know, it's not insignificant. There's thousands of dollars that can be redirected based on your individual, you know, decisions and priorities. It's just another one of the little things that helps, I think, really make us competitive in the business environment. When people are searching for a place to land and start a new business. To Patrick's point, the West Valley, when you look at the cost of commercial real estate there, whether you're renting or buying, the cost of housing there, I can't imagine that won't be just a booming area over the next few years from all aspects, especially from the business aspect. But I think that Arizona's approach to allocating taxpayer money to specific organizations is phenomenal. You know, you can argue that, I suppose, philosophically from a lot of different perspectives. So part of this is my opinion, but there are four different types of directions you can go with charitable giving, and it impacts the people that you want to help, and it's literally a dollar-for-dollar credit against your state income tax. So you're effectively saying, I'd rather pay this money to a private tuition organization or to public schools or some of my favorites, the foster care agencies and the charities that help the general public that's in need. Those are phenomenal. And you're effectively saying, rather than put it into the general fund, this is where I want that money to go.
Well, I'm surprised, actually, that there aren't more states doing that. I was not aware that so few are, because I've taken advantage of it for years now, and it gives me a good feeling. It doesn't necessarily save me any money on my tax bill, but at least I know my taxes are going somewhere that I personally can embrace and feel good about. So as you say, it's kind of an opinion type thing, because we're taking out of the poolness of the government deciding where to go. But we have relatively few choices sometimes of making those decisions of where our dollar goes.
Pretty much next to none, yes. So this allows us, it empowers us a little bit to say, here, I want at least this much to go to this organization. So it really is. It's a cool thing. And not that it's that interesting, but historically, some of that came about because of the State House of Representatives being frustrated many years ago with funds that were supposed to be allocated to schools that kind of slipped through the cracks into the general fund and were used to help other areas of the state budget. So part of the initial push was to say, here, this is something that we can get approved by the state legislature and put in place, and it at least allows the taxpayer to have some say over it. So it is. It's absolutely a cool concept. And it really has helped some of the organizations. There are several hundred organizations that are just now called qualified charitable organizations. And a married couple can allocate up to $800 of their tax bill, if you will, to those organizations. And they're specifically organizations that help people in need. Everything from the food banks to homeless shelters to organizations that help physically and mentally challenged residents. So it's across the board. If you have any sort of charitable inclination, you can't help but want to do that. And it doesn't hurt that you're basically just saying, my tax bill just went down by $800 because I gave $800 to these organizations.
Do you think most Arizona residents are familiar with that, or?
Boy, I tell you, we try to make sure they are. We send email blasts out 3 or 4 times a year. I go out, pitch the premise to every organization and everybody who will give me a platform throughout town during the course of the year, as I know a lot of CPA firms do. Mm-hmm. Because if nothing else, it's a very viable tax planning sort of thing to do. But even in spite of all that, you do it because you want to do it.
Right.
The public schools, we all know. I mean, unfortunately, even with the rhetoric of pay raises coming over the next 2 or 3 years, we're still painfully low nationwide in teacher pay. A married couple can send up to $400 to a public school and get a dollar for
now,
dollar.
Now, that I wasn't aware of, because I thought it was more for the private schools, the Catholic schools, those types of things. So that's fantastic if they can go to the public school district.
And it goes specifically to activities, enrichment activities, after school activities, things that are not in the budget any longer,
right.
Haven't been. So it is things that are above and beyond what the school's allowed to budget for now.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing from a standpoint of just a warm and fuzzy sort of thing to do,
right.
and clearly a good tax planning move too. And to your point, yeah, private tuition organizations, whether they're religious based or secular, there's a substantial, well over $2,000 for a married couple that can be given to private school organizations. And that one's maybe a tougher philosophical sell for some people, because they're like, why should I help fund private schools? And there's a bit of a dissertation as to why that still makes economic sense. The best one I heard was from years ago from the then superintendent of the Scottsdale School District that said, hey, we lose money on every child that comes into our public school. So if you're funding a private school, you're actually helping the public school. I've not you know, I've not vetted that information, but, you know, from somebody who is the superintendent of the public school system, it tended to, you know, have some ring of truth to it. So I always keep that in the back of my mind when people want to discuss the philosophical aspect of it.
It's a different take on that process, but interesting. So talking about charitable organizations, how effective, what are the opportunities out there from a networking standpoint? Is that where some of these charities should be focusing some of their times as well, as really making that personal connection to try to get supporters and advocate?
Sure, yes. I mean, there's so many here in town, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's so many, and there's so many different tiers of them. So you've got some that are, you know, have been established and have all sorts of donors and supporters. Then you've got some that are just starting out and, you know, you'll meet some of the people at these events where they're just looking to get things going and they're networking. I mean, they're doing what they should be doing. So, I mean, if you're asking from perspective of the organizations, should they be networking or which charities to find out to get involved with? I'm not.
I think the question comes from years and years ago. I worked in development in a charitable organization, and it seemed like we were so much more focused on just trying to figure out who we wanted to get to get their money, mm-hmm. as opposed to really just making the connection, making the relationship, and seeing what happened from there. Now, I'm dating myself a little bit because it was a while ago I did that, so I'm sure that there's different ways of thinking from a development standpoint. So I was just kind of wanted to hear your take on that.
Well, I mean, I think these days there's been this huge movement towards communities. And we've always had communities, but now that's like the marketing term, I guess, but also how we're trained to think and function, right? I mean, I'm just going to use Facebook as an example. Facebook groups are now really their communities. Anybody could launch one and have their own community. So, you know, when you're talking about a charitable organization or a nonprofit and they're, you know, building their following, in essence, they're building a community. So there has to be engagement. You have to build that relationship, right? So, you know, if I attended one event somehow because a friend had invited me to, you know, to an organization, if they're smart about it, they'll grab my information and they'll make sure that I am now a part of their community so that I get updates and I get invited to the next event. And, you know, that's how you build a relationship with the community outside of, you know, we've got these people on the list because we know they have money and we know they'll donate. Right. I'm not sure that's kind of what you're asking, but, you know, so I mean, this goes for charities, nonprofits, but really could be applied to any business model.
Well, and I would agree with that. And I think we've just come such a long way from the old model networking, so to speak, where now it's more of a connection process.
Right.
And I think it's great, because it's a much more enjoyable process than being just 100% focused on the business and exchange of business versus getting to know someone, building the relationship and making that kind of connection, mm-hmm. Which I'm sure is pretty important for you, Patrick, too. You know, there's a lot of realtors out there. So what set you apart? And, you know, what are the things that you try to portray to a potential, you know, clients that you can do above and beyond?
Well, To Gelly's point, networking is extremely important. Everything you do in life is basically networking. Whether you meet someone at the store, at the grocery store, and they say, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" You say, "You're a realtor." And they go, "Oh, I've got someone moving to town that would like to buy a house. Can you help them?" I mean, that's networking. Networking also provides a great source of building my concierge business. So by that, I mean, I know movers. I know local movers who can help you move your furniture from one house to another. I know great plumbers. I know great electricians, either from networking or from just my own, you know, working on my own business. So with a networking group of, you know, hundreds of people, there's going to be trusted professionals there that can help my business. So when one of my clients calls me and they're moving to town and they say, "I don't even know who to help move me," I've got a trusted professional that I've met networking that can help them move. That just sets us apart because we have so many contacts from doctors, lawyers, accountants, contractors, people who install carpet, tile, paint, you name it. I've got a resource for it. So if you call me and say, hey, I need someone to help me out, I'll be able to direct you to a trusted professional that I know is going to do a good job for you. You go on some of these sites, and not to mention any of them, but there's contractor sites out there. You don't know who you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving you a referral because I know these people's quality and I know they're good and they're going to do a good job for you. How did I build that? A lot of those people were from networking.
Well, and also to that point, I'll mention, you know, that you've also flipped homes.
Yes, I have.
So you have a great understanding of the remodeling aspect, both the pain of it and the joy of seeing it finished. But you've used then a lot of these individuals.
Yep.
So you have that personal experience. What's the environment now in the market for flipping homes?
The flipping market is pretty tough right now.
Yeah.
We have flipped, between my partner and I, we've flipped 500 homes in 7 years, over 500. And working in that environment was pretty easy to find homes. You could find them where there's a really nice margin and a spread so that you could afford to put the quality that customers want to see in their home and, you know, still maybe even make a profit. In today's market, the prices have gone up. Inventory is down. So it's very hard to find homes that have enough margin in it to say, hey, listen, I'm going to put $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 additional to make this home really, really nice and still have a profit at the end. It's really hard to do that right mm-hmm. now. They've moved on. A lot of people are doing remodeling instead of selling their home. They're remodeling their home now. There's always going to be a market for flipped homes. It's just smaller than it used to be. And the margins are a lot smaller than they used to be.
Okay.
But it's still a great business. It's a lot of fun. It's great to take a home that looks pretty bad and turn it into a showpiece. Gives you a lot of satisfaction. And the people who move into our homes absolutely love them. They love what we've done with them. They like our designs. And we get a lot of compliments from realtors, from buyers, from neighbors. So it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
But it's tough to do right now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a cyclical thing, too.
Right?
All markets and all industries are. So you never know when that's going to come back around.
Right.
So from an investment standpoint, because I know a lot of millennials now don't want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
They want to rent. But yet I also see and read that rents are very expensive versus buying a home. Some thoughts. I'm kind of throwing that out there in terms of, Is there the real tax advantage of the mortgage write-off? Is it just people just don't want the responsibility, so to speak, of owning a home? What are your thoughts, either of you, on that?
Traditionally, real estate has been a good investment. Will real estate continue to go up in value? I don't know. I can never say that because that's something that you can't predict. But you look at history as real estate has been a good investment. You're throwing your money away by renting because you're helping someone else build their net worth. Do prices go up and do prices go down? Yeah, we experienced that starting in 2007. Those were some painful years, but it did rebound. There are cycles. The millennial group, that age group, they don't really see buying as a benefit because they've seen a lot of the millennials have seen their parents lose their houses, lose their jobs, lose their equity in their homes, and it's painful for them, and they don't want to experience that. Yet there are millennials that I've sold homes and condominiums to who have lived in their condo for 3 or 4 years, and they said they made more money reselling that condo than they've made in any other investment. So there's good investments out there. Owning your own home gives you a sense of pride that renting doesn't give you. So there's a lot of advantages, but it's not for everyone.
Well,
I think it should be for everyone, but no.
Great.
What's our favorite line? 35 is the new 25, right? So, you know, it may just be that in a few years, they'll be ready and it'll look a little more attractive and the cycle may be going back up the curve, even though it seems like we're, you know, not necessarily at the top yet anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you may see it come around. And it is, to your point, it's a great investment over time. but it has to be at the right time for the buyer. And the tax breaks are going away a little bit on some of that. So, you know, but that should not ever be the overriding reason why you're making any kind of investment decision is for tax purposes. So it's to your point, I think in the long run and sooner than later, most of the millennials or the investment community, the residents in general, will catch on to the fact that, yes, over the long run, you're going to need to buy real estate. And if you're in a situation to hold, you won't lose money on it over time.
Right.
I mean, it's again, past performance is no guarantee of future performance. But on the other hand, there's no cycle in Arizona that has gone more than 10 years where the real estate market hasn't, over that period of time, at least shown some growth, even in spite of some of the significant dips we've seen. To Gelly's point, I have to compliment you. I really like the way that you succinctly identify not just the networking community here, but the business community in Arizona. It's the story that people bring and the relationships that you develop that generate success in business. You have to have a good idea. You have to perform. You have to do all those kinds of things. But you have to understand what your client / customer / patient is and who they are and what they're doing. And you know, the beauty of that is that's the best marketing that you can do. That's the best kind of networking you can do, is to have these relationships, develop them, ask questions rather than try to tell people things. Listen, we've had some, knock on wood, I think, extraordinary success in our firm simply because of that. We basically, every single bit of growth we've had is from referral because of our relationships with our clients. And frankly, you know, let's face it, accountants aren't usually the most exciting people in the room. but what makes it interesting for us is that we see hundreds, if not thousands, of different types of businesses and different types of people.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what makes the job phenomenal, you know, and makes this community seem really, really compelling, because there are so many different kinds of businesses and people out there. All you have to do is listen to them.
Well, I know you're very diversified in the businesses that you deal with. And so I'm sure you have a great referral network. Probably has nothing to do with the bowl of chocolates that's sitting out on your counter.
No. That's just a little bonus.
But I've dipped into that bowl a time or two. Yeah. So I know, Gelly, you've done quite a bit in your career. I mean, you're diversified as well in what you do. You've done a TEDx talk. You're a speaker and presenter. Tell me a little bit about that outside of, or maybe it isn't outside of Networking Phoenix, that it's all part and parcel to it.
Just in a sense of like what I do outside of Networking Phoenix? Or Well, I mean, I'm very entrepreneurial by nature. So, you know, Networking Phoenix is kind of that's what most people in town will know me as if they've heard of me. But I mean, yes, I like to play, you know, and I like to do a lot of fun things. And I get involved in a lot of different projects. My background is marketing communication. So, you know, through my consulting company, Gelly Medium, I get involved in a number of different projects with different clients, and it's all marketing, relationship marketing based, networking. Again, you know, just because I've done this for 11 to 12 years now, and Networking Phoenix has made me very visible. I was invited to do the TEDx talk, which was very exciting. You know, people say, how'd you apply for it? I'm like, I didn't apply. They invited me, which is like even better.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. And I talked about the title of the talk is Journey to Freedom, Sink, Swim, or Fly. And it doesn't really have much to do with networking. I have so much more to talk about than just networking, but that's usually what, you know, people will pull me in for. But I talk about how my family came here in 89. We were political refugees from the former Soviet Union. And, you know, the theme of my TEDx is freedom. So, you know, my family, the reason they came here is because they wanted freedom. And that's kind of how, well, I was 8 years old at the time, and that was my introduction to this concept of freedom, you know, and if that is an option, then nothing else is really a choice. Like, you know, you can't be stagnant in life. You have to keep moving. And that seems to be, that has not seems, but that has been the trend of my life from that moment. You know, so even when I followed some traditional paths, like, you know, going to college and, you know, choosing a career and all that, I mean, eventually it all came crumbling down because I'm really not built for that. Like, it's good that I went to college and, you know, did all of that. I mean, I don't regret it or anything. I loved it. But I'm such an entrepreneur that it was difficult for me to hold down jobs, not because I'm afraid of work. I mean, I'm a very hard worker. I mean, you know, let me tell you, launching a company is no joke. But working for somebody else didn't jive with me. Like, I would walk into work and physically get ill. It was just bad. Like, I couldn't do it. And I didn't know why. And then I realized, oh, it's because I'm not meant to be doing this. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm actually meant to be making a bigger impact. And I wasn't going to be able to make that impact until I cut all my core, or, you know, just kind of cut these notions of, I went to college for this career and this is what I should be doing. And let me tell you, the paycheck was amazing, you know, but I was like, I got to go. So I accidentally quit my job, which talk about in the TEDx as well. My manager pulled me into the office and she said something about working more hours. And I opened up my mouth not knowing what I was going to say. And I said, okay, then I put my 3 weeks in. And we both looked at each other and like weird disbelief. And she's like, are you sure, Gelly? Like, you can take that back. Think about it. And I'm like, no, if I said it, I mean it. You know, I'm out. Like, there's no going back. So that was in December of 2007. And then January 1st, 2008 is when we launched Networking Phoenix. And if you recall your history, in January 1st, 2008, that's when the economy completely crashed. Everybody landed on Networking Phoenix. I mean, I was at the perfect place at the perfect time by complete accident. And I had no idea this crash was coming. And it gave people, I think more than anything, it gave them hope. It gave them a sense of, at least I can go somewhere and talk to other people. I mean, I was 27 at the time. I had people calling me that were, you know, three times my age, like crying on the phone. I mean, this happened on the regular. You know, Gelly, I had my job for, you know, 30 years or 20 plus years, and I've never had to, I don't even have a resume. I don't even know what to do. And I'm like, I don't either. You know, I'm like, so I would try to guide them somehow, but it was a very devastating time, you know, for many. But again, for me, it just kind of set me up as this support community, support system for the community. I mean, there was just a lot of underlying things that were happening that, you know, you don't really know unless I tell you. Because when you look at it, people are like, oh, Gelly has networking events. Like, most people know like a percent of what, like, all, you know, what I've actually built and what I've done and what I do. You know, so you're asking me about these other things. And I mean, honestly, it's all part of me. Like, it's all the umbrellas, Gelly. And then there's all these different things that just kind of stem from that. But, you know, my passion is truly working with business owners. It's helping people connect to the right people, which, again, you know, we all have our innate traits. And for whatever reason, that's mine. Like, I can be in the same room and be like, oh, my God, you need to meet this person. Like, how do you two not know each other? You know, and I mean, I've been told I've made connections or have turned into, like, you know, best friends and yeah, stuff. So it's like, okay, I'm like, so this is what I do. So yeah, so I get pulled into a lot of projects. What has been fun for me is trying to figure out how to actually monetize that skill set. And I didn't for a long time. I did all of this for free initially because I didn't even, you know, when something is so innate to you, you don't even realize you should be charging for it. And then eventually, you know, when I launched my consulting business, that's part of what I do. Is like, well, this is, if you're looking to get to people, I can definitely help you. But, you know, we have to engage in a way for me to be able to allocate time to that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but like I said, I mean, it's fun. To me, life has to be fun. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not having fun, I'm not doing it. I'm a lot more motivated by fun and wanting to do something than what kind of money is attached to it. So that's my driving factor. And because of that, I, you know, get to do a lot of fun things.
Well, it wasn't so much about answering a question because this is a, you know, it's great opportunity to have a discussion to get to know people a little bit better. And so thank you for sharing that because I have a better view what you do, where you come from. You talk about, we've been talking a little bit about whether you're moving here to the state, I can only imagine what it's like to move to an entirely different country.
In 89 to Arizona from Soviet Union, no one heard of it.
Right.
When they told us that we were coming to Arizona, we like literally had never heard of it before. And so we started asking people, we were in Italy at the time.
Yeah.
And we started asking people, where's Arizona? And everyone's like, you're going to the desert. They're like literally we thought we were landing here in the desert. There's going to be like camels and sand. I am not kidding. That is literally what we were told.
You will wander for 40 years.
Right. Exactly. No, yeah, literally. My family's like, we should have just gone to Israel. At least we know where that is on the map. You know, because we didn't know where Arizona was. And people ask, well, how did you land in Arizona? So we asked for San Diego. Because we heard San Diego was nice. And I assume they were like, oh, we'll get them as close as we can. We'll just drop them off in Phoenix. So that's how we got here.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I know. Again, I've grown up here. So I've seen that change where you, when I've traveled in the past. I never said I was from Phoenix or Scottsdale because nobody really knew what that was. So it was but maybe they knew the state of Arizona. Traveling internationally, you know, it used to be, they didn't really know Arizona, but now, well known. So yeah, put a footprint.
We really have. And I noticed that when I tell people I'm from Arizona, they're like, oh, do you live in Scottsdale? I'm like, yeah. You know, and they're like, ooh, Scottsdale. And I'm like, is that like a thing? Apparently it's a thing. I'm like, I do live in Scottsdale. So no, I agree with you. Like, yeah. And then people ask, I mean, they sing about Scottsdale in songs now. So I'm like, you know, we're getting up there. They're singing about Scottsdale.
Well, yeah, standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. Would have thought that Winslow would make it all right?
Right? Yeah.
But so I'm always surprised when things are coming up to the end of the hour, though, because it usually goes so fast that we're about 10 minutes out. And I just want to give everyone, you know, enough opportunity to kind of close up a little bit. So I'm going to give each of you a few minutes to just, if there's anything remaining you kind of want to say, if there's any events you have going on, and certainly if you have any contact information that you want to share, I'm more than happy to give you that opportunity. So I'll give it to you, Howell.
Well, thank you. Well, I think that more so than anything, I think that this has been interesting. It was great to meet everybody. Again, we're a CPA firm in Scottsdale, and it is a great place to live. It's a great place to do business. We've enjoyed it immensely, and we've grown as the city has grown, as the state has grown. You can't say enough about living here. You know, probably half of our clientele that comes in are from out of state. They're escaping the cold, the high taxes, lousy business environment. It's, you know, when you look at it and you look around and like you, we've been here so long, we feel like natives, that you're kind of happy to be here. And to Gelly's point, you're happy to get up in the morning and we work hard, but it doesn't feel like work because it's so enjoyable. And to your point specifically, what makes it fun are the people. You know, it's one thing to memorize tax code and tax changes and all those kinds of things. It's another to get to know the people and the businesses that they run and what their lives are like and you know, do our little part to help. I always tell people, to Patrick's point earlier, you know, if you want to talk tax, we can certainly do that. If you want philosophy, I actually majored in that. And if you want to drink wine, we'll just do that and talk tax. As you know, and philosophy. And not necessarily in any set order, random access as necessary. So that's kind of our gig.
That's great. Do you want to give out any contact information?
So we're at Cactus and Hayden in Scottsdale. Best phone number is 480-730-1569. Our website is azcpas.com, azcpas.com.
Okay, perfect. Pat?
Yeah, so thank you for having us today. It's been great meeting everybody. And I guess we are the Scottsdale Mutual Admiration Society. We all live in Scottsdale and love it. But all of Phoenix is a great place to live. Like I said, I started coming here in 1985. And I would spend 2 weeks every year on business. No, excuse me, 2 weeks every quarter on business here. So I got to know the Valley extremely well for 25 years. And then when we decided to move here, I knew the city as well as I knew Portland, which is where I'm from. So I wanted to move here because it's fabulous 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 months a year. I mean, I can't get enough of the warm weather. It's a great place to live. We have great schools. We've got outdoor activities, depending on what you want to do. All over the state, there's different outdoor activities. So there's just a lot to offer and a lot of great things in Phoenix, Scottsdale, and all of Arizona. So, you know, I chose to live here, and I think a lot of people should choose to live here. But that being said, it's home. I'm never going to leave. You know, I'll go back to Oregon and visit, but not to live. And it's just a great place. Should someone want to move here, I'm happy to help them buy a home or to whatever they want to do in that department. They can reach me at 480-510-8089. And my email would be azrepatrick, P-A-T-R-I-C-K, @gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. You want to wrap it up, Kelly?
Sure. So, yep, for anyone that's listening that is interested in any kind of networking events, they're more than welcome to visit networkingphoenix.com. Phoenix is all spelled out, so networkingphoenix.com. Again, it's free to create a profile. Just give it on LinkedIn or Facebook, and we've got a calendar that lists all the different networking events. I'm actually working on possibly having a holiday party in December, but nothing is set yet, but it should be. So again, if people are interested in that, there should be one coming up in December, but there are networking events happening daily. If they want to get in touch with me, they can either do that, you know, contact us through networkingphoenix.com, or if they'd like to visit my consulting site, which is gelly.com, G-E-L-I-E.com, gelly.com. There's, again, a contact us through there, and it all comes into my inbox, and I answer my email. So there you go.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank all of you for contributing to a great conversation. I really appreciate you being here and getting to know a little bit more about all of you. And with that, you've been listening to Rhino Nation, sponsored by Rhino Online Strategies and eCreativity. We partner with you to identify your content and marketing needs and provide you with fresh, innovative, dynamic copy that will effectively connect to your market. And we offer expertise in targeting and reach through social media channels, creating content and posts to targeted specific audiences, and offering pixelated coding to capture email addresses and analytics so you can build your email list, which leads to increased customer engagement, a higher conversion rate, and increased sale. We help empower you to have control of your business and future by amplifying your message and delivering it to the right market. Thank you all so much. And until next time, this is Michelle Favre.